Have you ever felt like you're trying to tuck an octopus into bed? Just when you think you've got one arm settled, another pops out. That's what living through our current moment feels like. Climate catastrophe, political chaos, personal crises multiplying faster than we can count them. We're all walking around with this low-grade fever of dread, scrolling through news that makes our stomachs drop, wondering if hope is just another luxury we can no longer afford. But here's the thing. We've survived before. We've done hard things when everything seemed impossible. The question isn't whether we can endure, it's how we'll choose to live while the world reshapes itself around us. Picture yourself at an airport, flight delayed for hours, snapping at a nail salon worker because you've hit your limit. You're newly married, questioning whether marriage should feel this ordinary, and everyone keeps asking cheerfully, "How's married life?" This was the moment everything crystallized, not in some mountaintop revelation, but in the messy intersection of disappointment and memory. 33 years earlier, newly sober and desperate in Miami, a stranger in a pink Cadillac had driven through the night to rescue someone she'd never met. That's what grace looks like. Unexpected, imperfect, arriving exactly when we've given up on it. The wisdom here cuts through all our spiritual bypassing. We don't need to be fixed before we can begin. When spiraling about a marriage that felt more like friendship than fairy tale, the reminder came swift. He's your friend, someone you trust, talk to, and like. We spend so much energy chasing euphoria that we miss the quiet miracle of companionship. Beginning where we are isn't settling, it's the only honest way forward. Inside a prison, a woman named Ali attended AA meetings for companionship, eventually admitting her truth. Something flickered to life, a pilot light that had been waiting. While serving her sentence on a conservation crew, she found a baby coyote. The crew chief started calling her Ali Baba, no longer just prisoner D53789, but a protector. Something within her had opened. This is what the soul does. Even when clouded by sadness, disappointment, or shame, it remains beneath all the damage. Think of it as a lighthouse from which we observe the vast celestial ocean. It's the purest expression of being alive, the one part they couldn't wreck. Your soul can be damaged by acne, political madness, unloving parents, or your own worst choices, but never mortally. It becomes calloused and barricaded, yet remains ready for hope. When working properly, it tugs on your pant leg to slow down, observes quietly, sometimes with mouth hanging open in fascination or bliss. Even when you think there's little left, you still have soul. Marriage proves more disconcerting than cat ownership. Intimacy means into me I see, not just the lovely aspects, but the disgusting parts too. The wanting others to fail, the using people, the entitlement. Living with someone means they see both your biographical neuroses and your divine identity. He sees the arms that hold him like never before. She sees a tall, thoughtful know-it-all who corrects her about the umbilicumception. One morning, their kitten went missing. Instant catastrophe thinking. Dead, frozen, eaten by coyotes. They searched everywhere, then sat together on the couch, scared and sad. That's intimacy in darkness. Two people huddled together, never giving up. Then, suddenly, someone was gently nibbling her toes. The kitten was back. Now, whenever one of them is afraid, the other says, "The kitten isn't dead. The kitten is in the living room." And the scared one feels okay again, briefly, which is all we can really hope for most days. Our human response to each other's hurt gives us hope. We all harbor grudges. Against damaging ex-partners, difficult parents, even ourselves. People claim we can't forgive others until we forgive ourselves, but that's backward. Self-forgiveness is the advanced practice. When you're 8 and someone shames you, you can't protect yourself. You think the shame is you. Even after years of recovery, fear of your defective nature resurfaces. But we all have dual citizenship, perfect and neurotic. Forgiveness grows in spirals, like a nautilus shell. Once, newly sober, a letter went to Esther, whose husband had been part of an affair during drinking days. Deep contrition expressed, no forgiveness expected. Esther wrote back that as a Jew, forgiveness was a mitzvah. She'd forgiven long ago and hoped for self-forgiveness. Over time, it came piecemeal, wanting the reward of a lighter life. To help kids with their terror about the ruined earth, take them to a beach. Let them find plastic bottles and garbage, experience their sorrow, then clean one section and bring back both trash and treasures. Lay everything beneath something larger, where it becomes part of a bigger story. Not just crud from a ruined beach, but items from a now cleaner beach loved by caring children. A 70-something cancer survivor confessed to church, "I have made a life and career of being a good sport, and I am worn out." Friends spiral into dark conversations about democracy and climate until voices trail off. Each day brings more disheartening news, like tucking that octopus into bed again with new arms constantly popping out. How does someone whose son has incurable brain cancer maintain optimism? "I just can't give up. Under the fear and terror, there's something that won't let me. What's the option? I live with what I can't control, what I don't think I can bear, yet I love my life." This is Lunch Money Faith. Nothing dramatic, just enough to get through. Buddhist wisdom reminds us, our thoughts are just movies playing in our mind. The central question is, who is watching all these movies? Climate activist Greta Thunberg calls on us to focus as if our house is on fire, because it is. Young activists hit a low note that holds us up, like timpani at the back of an orchestra. We've done hard jobs throughout history, stopped Hitler, smallpox, DDT. We'll save the world by repeatedly busting the dread looming over us, taking the next right step. Years ago at Esalen Institute during a storm, I arrived broken after my third book was savaged. Drunk and stumbling toward the cliffs, consciousness returned partway down. Fingers digging into drenched earth, I pulled back, gasping. At dawn came the realization, I could have died. I might have a drinking problem. The prayer came desperate. Help me, help me, help me. After breakfast, where a kind woman touched my hand with heart-changing tenderness, I surrendered to something unnamed. Curiosity returned. Watching the hillside of my fall, the sky was milky with subtle cloud textures. Deep attention watching otters wrapped in kelp. The soul felt like both mother and telegraph operator, receiving the panorama of life. In a world selling productivity and mindfulness as commodities, we've forgotten love must suffice, along with our memories and stories. The center holds paradoxically, containing everything like the gravity well of our galaxy. Despite terrible losses, we're saved by cocoons of goodwill, evolution, and sweet milky tea. When the news makes your stomach drop, remember, the kitten isn't dead. The kitten is in the living room. That's enough to keep going.